consistency. Consistency, even a small amount, but if you're consistent with it, you do it each day, then that becomes a tremendous amount. And he started off with a 10-minute Torah, and that became a whole shtickle Torah from there. And we saw also in the Gemara, who was it coming, he says, Harsduki, he says, Rabbi Zeira, right, Rabbi Zeira, when he's coming to Eretz Yisrael, he didn't want to wait for the ferry. He says, I have to grab whatever opportunity I have. You know, if I can go to Eretz Yisrael now, I don't wait for the ferry for 2 hours. I want to do it now. There's a big inyan, a big mila in grabbing whatever opportunities you have. And when you have the opportunity, you need to grab it. And I'm not saying it has to be Daf Yomi, but I think Daf Yomi is very good, because with Daf Yomi, you know what you're learning every day. In other words, the number one for programs here in the shul, I know where we go, so I'll give Shira Maria Smach, but with Daf Yomi, you know every day, this is the Daf I'm learning, and I'm learning the same Daf that thousands of Jews throughout the world are learning. You're part of a bigger program, you know, going back to Rabbi Shapiro in 1923. I think it's very good for people, whatever views you have, but I think, now people, I'll do this, I'll do that. Meanwhile, they don't do anything. I think the Daf Yomi is very good. Now, there's a piece of Torah from this week's Parsha that Rav Simon quotes in the Sefer Imri Baruch. He quotes from Emuni Techa by Rav Wolfson. It says that the door of the Mabul, the generation of the flood, was Ru'i to get the Torah. In other words, Hashem would have liked to have given the Torah in the door of Mabul. And the idea is that the rain in its chitzonio, in other words, the rain has two aspects, like Torah is compared to water. So, like, the outer aspect of the rain is the rain that we see, but the inner aspect is the Torah. So it means that you can say like a ruchni and a gashmi level. In other words, so the rain comes down in time of Mabul for 40 days and 40 nights, and so the Torah was given after 40 days and 40 nights. And Hashem really wanted to give the Torah in the time of the Dura Mabul, but he didn't do it. The people were not up to it. They did not want to grab that opportunity. They weren't interested in it. And he says also that that actually Rav Packer was mentioning to me that we see it says by Baruch Chulin, says on Kuf Lamed Tet, that where do we have a remnant from Moshe in our Torah? It says B'shagam Hu Basar. It's a pasuk. It says B'shagam Hu Basar. So B'shagam. So the shin and the mem is Moshe, and then the bet and the gimel add up to hey. So it's a remez for Torah in the pasuk. In other words, but the remez is by the babel. The remez is by the babel. And with this, he explains that at the time of Matan Torah, so the Chazal Machzal teach us that there was a whole system that the nations of the world said, what's going on? Is there another Mabul coming to the world? Why is there another Mabul coming to the world? They saw that the constellations were aligned, they were, at the time of the Mabul. So it's like, it means that, the way Rav Packer was saying it, like, they were Rishayim, but they had so much potential. With that potential, they could have received the Torah. So the idea is, everybody here, Tanahara, I'm grateful everybody's coming here. Everybody has a tremendous potential. And I hope if people can come to Daf Yomi, I think it's a wonderful thing. And you can't compare learning on your own to learning with a group of people. The Chafetz Chaim goes at a great length and is safer in the Nidfei Yisrael. I've spoken about this in the past. If you're learning with a group, the group pulls you along. You learn on your own, I do a couple of days. You know, I learn on my own. You know, I close the sefer, I come back, I guess I'm where I pick up where I left off. You learn with a group, they're a Daf Gimel. I come back, oh, it's just a couple of days. They're a Daf Yud Gimel. How can that be? Yeah, you've been gone 10 days. That's why they're a Daf Yud Gimel. So, and you learn with a group, you're zochet something to teach Torah. Even if you have questions, you're zochet to teach Torah. Anyway, now, lastly, we all should wish the Baal Shem Rebbe Leibowitz. He just became a grandfather. He looks very young. He is very young. But he became a grandfather. He had a granddaughter on Sunday. So Baal Shem to him. Rebbe Leibowitz, we're very pleased to have you. And Baruch Abba B'Shem Hashem. And we're eager to hear your words of Torah.
Okay, thank you. What's the timing?
You just do a half hour and then you're fine.
Great. Okay. Fantastic. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me, Rabbi Goldstein. Thank you. It's a pleasure to listen. I haven't listened to it, sat in the Daf Yomi Shir in a while, so it's a real treat to be able to participate in that way. And mazel tov to everybody on finishing Maseches Ksubos. So I was trying to think of what would be a good topic to talk about as we come to the end of this somewhat challenging but also very enjoyable Masechta. Rabbi Yismach suggested that I tell everyone that everyone has to make Aliyah. I said, then you won't have a shul, because, you know, all the sugya is about Eretz Yisrael at the end. But then I saw a tweet on Twitter, And the tweet went like this. It was the day before the Daf Yomi was going to learn the Gemara about the Shalosh Shavuos, which is just a couple of days ago. The Shalosh Shavuos are the three oaths that God made with humanity, and one of which is that Klal Yisrael is not allowed to go up in force and take over Eretz Yisrael, and it serves as the backbone for the Sefer VaYoel Moshe, written by the Satmar Rebbe. So, because the Satmar Rebbe argued that if there's a Gemara, that it's a violation of a Shavua for us to take over control of Eretz Yisrael, so this is a terrible issur to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote a whole book about that, as probably surprises nobody in this room that the Satmar Rebbe would write a book of that nature. So someone tweeted as follows: what's the over-under on how often "we don't paskin from Agadita" will be said in Teaneck and the Five Towns over the next 2 days? Meaning, what the person is trying to say is that this Gemara could make us uncomfortable for people from Zionistic communities, where we believe very strongly in the value of the Medina. How are we to understand this Gemara? So the go-to answer, the simple answer is, it's an Agadita Gemara. We don't paskin based on Agadita Gemara, so that's what we're going to be saying in all of our Daf Yomi Shiurim, that we don't paskin from Agada. And then I thought, that's a great topic. Do we not the Zionism topic? Do we paskin from Agadita? Is that true? Is there such a rule? Meaning, we just finished an entire Masechta that has a lot of halacha at the end, a lot of Agada, and how do they blend together? In what way are they distinct from each other? And is there like this red line that you're not allowed to derive any rules of how to behave, of actual halacha l'maaseh, from Agadita? Is there such a rule? And if there is such a rule, what are the parameters of that rule? What are some of the applications of that rule? So I was, for some reason, the last couple of times I've been asked to speak at Siyumim, I always end up talking about Agadita, I guess because people remember the Agadita a little more. I remember on the day of my children, who just had a baby, on the day of their wedding, I spoke at a Siyum in Englewood, New Jersey, and I spoke about Agadita at that Siyum, so it worked well, 10 months later, and I have a grandchild, so it's very exciting. So who knows what this will bring. So we're going to talk about Agadita again. So first of all, Rav Schechter, in an article about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society that was written probably about 40 years ago, Rav Schechter wrote that he's not bothered at all by this Gemara about the Gimel Shavuos, because he says, clearly it's an Agadita Gemara, and Ein Lemeidin Min Agada. He actually says exactly what the tweet assumed we would all say, that we just don't learn from Agadita Gemara, so it's really irrelevant to Halacha. Rav Schechter added that not only do we not learn from Agadita Gemara, the Rambam doesn't quote this, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote this. There's nowhere in Shulchan Aruch that says that the Jewish people are not allowed to establish a government in Eretz Yisrael. So if it didn't make it into the Rambam, it didn't make it into Shulchan Aruch, so it simply doesn't make it into the Halacha. To be sure, there are many other answers as well as to why we're not bound by this Shalosh Shavuos. For example, some suggest that once the Balfour Declaration was signed, we're not coming b'choma anymore. We're not coming by force. The nations of the world got together and said that we deserve a place, that we deserve a homeland, and therefore we didn't forcefully take anything over. We graciously accepted what the nations of the world had agreed to give us. Another possibility is that the Gemara says that among the three Shavuos is that the Umos Ha'olam have their end of the bargain also, that they're not allowed to persecute Klal Yisrael more than necessary, whatever that means, Yoser Midai, more than to be expected, I don't know. But they're not to go overboard in their persecution of the Jewish people. So already, before World War II, Rav Menachem Kasher quoted that the Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha from Dvinsk, said 2,000 years of Jewish history have shown us that they've broken their end of the bargain, and therefore we are no longer bound by our end of the bargain. Kal v'chomer, after the Holocaust, that Rav Meir Simcha would assume the same thing. Another approach is that maybe it's true. Maybe we weren't allowed to establish a Medina. But I looked through 111 Blad of Masechta Ksubos. It never says that if you do, you got to give it back. Right? It never says that you have to move out once you have a stav. So maybe the founding fathers of the Medina made a terrible mistake and did a terrible Avera. But it doesn't tell us anywhere that we have to give it back. And a fourth suggestion is offered by the Maharal, Rav Shachter quotes Maharal in Netzach Yisrael, that the word Shavua in Tanakh very often doesn't mean an oath. It means something that's sort of a fact of life. It's just the way things are. And the sad truth of history for thousands of years has been that the Jewish people were unable to be Ola B'chama. We were unable to go back to Eretz Yisrael and take over Eretz Yisrael, which means that when we look at that Gemara, we should not look at a reason to reject a Jewish government in the land of Israel. We should look at that Gemara as a reason to be so grateful that the rules of the game have changed. The rules of life have changed, and that tells you that we're drawing ever closer to the end of days. We're drawing ever closer to a point where all of the rules are, or many of the rules are going to change, where Shibud Malchios is going to end. Even the opinion in the Gemara that says Ein Bein Olam Azali Yimosah Mashiach Al Shibud Malchios Bulvad, that in the days of Mashiach the world is going to function normally. There will be rich people and poor people, and there will be all of the normal struggles that people have. But there won't be any Shibud Malchios. The nations of the world are going to come to complete peace with Israel and with the Jewish people. So this is a step in that direction, that there is a place for the Jewish people. Now, the Satmar Rebbe's argument is, this is not a Nagarta. Who told you this is a Nagarta Gemara? This is a Halacha Gemara. And he goes to great lengths to explain why it is that we pay so much attention why violating a Shavua is so severe of an Avera. It's such a terrible, horrific Avera. And he also discusses why it is that people have not paid so much attention to this Isser. So anyway, that's all my introduction. Because of that Gemara, I thought, oh, it's a good idea to talk about Agarata and Halacha, and how they affect each other, and why it is, or if it is, that we're not allowed to learn Halacha from Agada. Now, what does the word Agada even mean? You know, when you say, oh, an Agarata Gemara is coming up, that means it's typically going to be an easier day of Daf Yomi, right? Meaning, that means I give Daf Yomi shir at 6:15 in the morning. It means less glaze on the eyes of the people in the shir that morning if it's an Agarata Gemara. Because it's stories, it's exciting, it's moral lessons, and often that's what it is. It's stories of tzaddikim. Sometimes it's Agarata Gemara, it's not as exciting. In Maseches Gittin, you have a couple of dapim of Gemara of just medicine, but not like modern medicine, ancient medicine, Talmudic medicine, where Rav Ram ben Arambam writes, if you try to put that medicine into practice, you are a murderer, right? Meaning you cannot use such medicine. So what do we even do with that Gemara? You have dapim in a row of Gemara like that. Sometimes it's theology, it's the meaning of the world, it's God, it's the angels, it's right and wrong. Sometimes it's just these obscure comments or stories that we have no idea what they mean. There are demons juggling fire over a river, and this one drops that, and you have no idea, and then they travel around the world 17 times, you have no idea what it's talking about or what it's supposed to mean. So Agarata, the word itself is such, it's a word laden with so many definitions and so many meanings, that whatever rule you're going to give about Agarata, like we don't learn Halacha from Agarata, is always going to require further clarification. Does that mean all Agarata? Does that mean certain types of Agarata? So we could probably all agree that we don't learn Halacha from the more esoteric Agarata. But what about the Agada that's more straightforward, the interpretations of Psukim, the stories? So it happens to be that this is not even the only example toward the end of this Masechta where we have a discussion about learning Halacha from Agada. There is another place in this Masechta that where this topic comes up as well, and it was very recent. We just came across it very recently. And that is the Gemara that talks about the death of Rebbe. So when Rebbe was dying, he was very, very ill, and it was difficult for the Amsa de Bei Rebbe, for the maidservant, to watch him die. But the Rabbanim were all holding Tehillim gatherings, and they were davening that Rebbe should die. But the Malachim wanted Rebbe, and the people down here wanted Rebbe, and there was this tug of war of Rebbe. And if you're in the middle of a tug of war, it's excruciating, and he was suffering terribly. So the Amsa de Bei Rebbe distracted everybody, and she davened that Rebbe should die, and his neshama was taken. at that time when she davened that he should die. The Gemara in Maseches Nedarim and Daf Mem quotes Rav Dimi, who says that when one is mevaker chola, when one visits a sick person, you give that person life. And anybody who doesn't visit a sick person, it causes him to die. And the Gemara explains that Rav Dimi was saying that anybody who visits a sick person will give him life because it will motivate one to pray for that person. That's the primary purpose of Bikur Cholim, of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. There are other purposes as well. They may need you to adjust their pillow. They may need you to bring them a smoothie from their favorite yogurt shop or whatever. There may be other things that you can do to be helpful, but primarily the greatest help one can do is to daven for a person. And that even plays out in halacha. The Gemara tells us, don't visit a chola in the first few hours of the day, nor in the last few hours of the day, because your tefillah will be off kilter. Meaning, if you visit in the first few hours of the day, the person just got a night's sleep, although in hospitals nowadays they don't get a night's sleep, they come and poke you every hour, but if the person just got a night's sleep, he's going to be well rested, he or she will be well rested, and he's going to look stronger than he really is, and you're not going to daven as hard. If you come at the end of the day, after a parade of visitors have come, and the person is just exhausted, they're going to look worse than they really are, and you're going to say, it's not worth davening for this person's a goner anyway. And the only way to calibrate your tefillah appropriately is by coming at the right time where you can get an accurate picture of what the person is experiencing. Which means, again, highlighting this idea that the primary purpose of visiting the sick is to pray that the person is going to live. And if you don't visit the sick, and therefore you don't pray, so that's causing him to die, because he's losing out on those prayers. Comes along the Ran, on the side of the Gemara, Maseches Nedarim, and by the way, this is the bridge now, right? We're heading into Maseches Nedarim, and the Ran is the primary commentary on the side of the page of Nedarim. On the other side of the page, you have what they advertise as Rashi. It says on the top of the page, Rashi. One thing we know about Rashi, he was good enough, he didn't have to advertise himself. When it's really Rashi, we could tell it's Rashi. When they put on the top of the page and they write the word Rashi, that probably means it's not Rashi. Probably means someone's dressing up as Rashi. So, and that's the assumption, that it's not really Rashi. But the Ran in Maseches Nedarim is the primary commentary. It's like Rashi and Tosfos all together, the Ran. It's a fascinating commentary. And the Ran notes that the Gemara implies that when a person visits the sick, there are occasions that he should pray that they die, meaning when he sees that they're suffering and there's no chance that they're going to recover. And the Ran says, and I'll prove it to you, that you're allowed to pray that somebody should die if they're suffering too terribly. Because the Gemara at the end of Maseches Ksuba says that the Amsa de Rebbe, the maidservant in Rebbe's house, when she saw that he was suffering, and it wasn't about him getting better, he was not going to get better, and he was suffering terribly every moment he was here, she davened that he should die. It's actually a very interesting discussion in halacha. Are you allowed to stop treating a person? If you could prolong their life by treating them, but they're suffering, are you allowed to stop treating them? So some of the poskim say, if you could daven that they can die, then under certain circumstances, and we're not going into the details now, ask a shayla, but under certain circumstances, it could be that you're allowed to stop treating them. Others say, no! You're allowed to daven, they could die, because then you're leaving it up to Hashem. But as far as our own responsibility, we have to do everything to prolong their life, and we have to treat them and keep them alive as long as possible. But what do you see? What did the Ran do over here? He took a story in the Gemara about Rebbe and his maidservant, and the Ran said, halacha l'masa, this you're allowed to daven in a certain way, in a way that I would have thought you're not allowed to daven. Other Mefarshim are not sure about the Ran's Raya. They don't think it's such a great proof. The Gemara says that the Chachamim were davening urgently that Rebbe should recover. And that implies that a person should daven for somebody who's sick to recover, not that he should die. Meaning, essentially, what many of the Achronim say is, who told you that we paskin like the Amsa de Bei Rebbe? Meaning, all we know from that story is that the Talmid Chacham were all davening that Rebbe should live, and one maidservant davened that he should die. So all of a sudden the Ran is going to say, oh, what are you doing? You have a machlokas between all the Talmidei Chachamim and one maidservant. I paskin like the maidservant. You're not allowed to paskin like the maidservant. Who told you who this maidservant is even? Do we even know anything about her? Was she knowledgeable at all? How can you direct? But implicit in that discussion is that if we did know about her, or if we were to somehow find out that the Talmidei Chachamim ultimately admitted that she was right, then you'd be allowed to paskin from that Gemara. it's a viable proof, even though ostensibly it's not Gadata Gemara. And so some suggest the very fact that the Gemara records her actions means that she doesn't need any further haskama. That obviously she was a great person, otherwise the Gemara wouldn't be recording her every move. Rav Vosner in the Tshuva in Shevet HaLevi Cheleches says that you can't bring proof from a maidservant. She was so great that she could sense that Rebbe was going to die momentarily anyway, and therefore she thought to just make, you know, to grease the wheels a little bit, make it easier for his neshama to transition to the next world. But we can never make any cheshbonos like that. So again, the entire discussion assumes that there is the ability to learn halacha from Agarita. So now we have two gemaras. We have a gemara about the Shalosh Shavuos, where the Satmar Rebbe writes a whole sefer that tells you that yes, you can learn halacha from here. And then we have a gemara about the Amsa Debei Rebbe, where Rishonim, the Ran, derives halacha from here, and many Achronim take that very seriously. So where does it come from, this idea that one is not allowed to derive halacha from Agada? I should point out, by the way, that when it comes to the placement of Agadata, Rav Tzadik HaKohen has a very fascinating comment. He says that if a particular topic of Agadata lands in a certain Masechta, there's a connection. And if it's not obvious at first, look more closely and you'll see the connection. For example, all of the Agadata about the Churban, about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, is in Gittin. Because in a certain sense, Churban is the divorce papers that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving to Klal Yisrael. All of the Gemara is about Eretz Yisrael. Maseches Ksubas, we just learned it, right? Because that's the Ksuba between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. That's the love story between Hashem and Klal Yisrael when He gives us Eretz Yisrael. All of the Gemara is about Kabbalah HaTorah are Maseches Shabbos, because the Torah was given on Shabbos. The Gemara is about, what was the other example that they give? The Gemara is about the Man are in Maseches Yoma, because Yoma is about Yom HaKippurim. When we don't take care of ourselves physically, we're purely spiritual beings. And there was one time in history where all our food was spiritual food. It didn't create any waste product. And that was the Man. So there's always a connection, says Rav Tzadok, between the Agadita in the Masechta and the Halacha of the Masechta. But anyway, where does this rule come from that we don't learn from Agadita? It happens to be a passage in Talmud Yerushalmi, in the second parak of Maseches Peah. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, Rabbi Zeira b'shem Shmuel, Ein lemeidim min ha'alachos lemin ha'gadus lemin ha'tosafos lemin ha'talmud. So everyone jumps on that line that we don't learn from Agados. And it's elaborated on by Rishonim. In fact, I'll give you a few examples. There are many, many examples. I just came across a new one today as I was giving shiur in Nida. Rabbi Goldstein mentioned, I say shiur in Nida. What are the chances? You're learning Maseches Nida on a day you want to talk about Agadata, and you come across an example of Ein Lemeidim Midivrei Agada. But I'll give you a few examples. One example, there's a passage in the Trumas HaDashen based on the Gemara in Erevin. The Gemara in Erevin tells us, Yachal Yaniach Adam Tefillin B'Shabbos as Yom Tovim. One might think that one should put on Tefillin even on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That tefillin are an os. Misha tzrich an os. Yatzu elu shein guf an os. Only a day that requires an os, that requires the special symbol, you put on tefillin. Shabbos and Yom Tov themselves are an os. It's an os yibeni yibenechem. Shabbos itself is an os. You don't need the os of tefillin. You already have the os of Shabbos. Asks the smag, wait a second. On a weekday, we also have an os already, because bris milah is called an os. So says the smag, it must be al pishnayim edim yakum davar, that you need two osos, you need two edim constantly. So during the week, one has bris milah and tefillin. On Shabbos, one has bris milah and Shabbos. So you always have two. Good. Someone asked the Trumas HaDashen, what if a person, a man, could not get a bris milah? Why could he not get a bris milah? It was forbidden for him to do so. He has, what's the blood disease? Hemophilia. Right? So he was a hemophiliac. He could not get a bris milah. It would be dangerous. Nowadays they give blood clotters and they're able to do it. But in the old days, it would be dangerous to give him a bris milah. Should he put on tefillin on Shabbos? Because he needs two osos. Should he put on tefillin on Shabbos? I remember when I was in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, we had a Rebbe, Rebbe Goldstein mentioned I was in Keren Biavna, so our Rebbe Rav Silver invited us to come on Purim on one condition: we cannot drink before we come, or while we're there. He was very strict about drinking. You have to come. There were other rabbis that you can only come drunk, but you have to come completely sober. So there was one guy in yeshiva that was in the shir that had drank a little bit before we came, maybe more than a little bit, but he was trying to cover it up. He was trying to pretend because he knew the Rebbe would be very upset. So we sat down at the table, and the Rebbe was saying over Shiurim on Rambam in Hilchos Megillah, and we were listening and we were taking notes. And as the Rebbe was in the middle of explaining something in a Rambam in Hilchos Megillah, the guy couldn't contain himself anymore. And he said, "But Rebbe, if a person doesn't have a bris milah, does he wear tefillin on Shabbos?" And the Rebbe turned to him and said, "Why, David, how long has this been bothering you? I mean, like, is this the kind of question? Like, this is like an urgent question." So someone asked the Truma Sedeshin this question. I later found that it was a Truma Sedeshin, that my friend David, he was my chavrusa actually, my chavrusa David's, kasha was a Truma Sedeshin's kasha. Truma Sedeshin says, "What kind of kasha? The whole thing is not gadata gemara. That Shabbos is an oath, this is an oath, tefillin is an oath. It's all a gadata. You don't learn halacha from agada. Ein lemeidim midivrei agada." And that's it. He just dismisses the whole thing. That you can't learn from Divrei Agada. Another place where it's discussed, the Shevet HaLevi, Rav Asner, this is where I came across this afternoon, this morning, in Shir with my Talmidim in Yeshiva. There is a halacha that most people are unaware of, because usually it's irrelevant. And the halacha is called Dam Chimud. That the Gemara says in Maseches Nida, that if a man proposes to a woman, proposes marriage to a woman, and she accepts, so even if she does not become a nida, we assume that there was the hormones are likely to be out of whack for a moment or two, and it's likely that there's some amount of dam that would appear, and therefore she requires shiva nikiyim. And that's true even if she's postmenopause. That's true even if she's pregnant. It's true no matter what, that the Gemara says that there is such a concern. Tavu li nasei. And Vinispaisa, and she agrees, there's such a thing called Dam Chimud. Now, nowadays, when a young couple, let's say, gets married, a woman doesn't go to the mikvah because of Dam Chimud. She goes to the mikvah because she was in Nida anyway. So it's irrelevant that there was a proposal along the way. But, just like many other halachos, this halacha became relevant in COVID. Right? In COVID, there were all these halachas that most of us, when we learn through the Shulchan Aruch, we just ignore. Oh, that never happens. Flip the page. And all of a sudden, Rav Shechter was paskening these halachos, right and left. He's writing tshuvas and he's paskening all these halachos. And we said, "Rebbe, how do you know all this stuff?" He said, "Well," we said, "you know, maybe we should publish this. You know, we should start put together a sefer of all these tshuvas." He said, "Nah, there are no chidushim here. It's all black and white in Shulchan Aruch. It's all right there. It was there the whole time. It's just no one else was reading it." but if you pay attention to every detail. So this came up. What happened? I remember I had a situation. I was supposed to be Masada Kiddushin at a wedding on the Sunday night after Purim at the beginning of COVID. The father of the Chassan on that Wednesday said, "I see where this is going. The world is going to shut down by Sunday night. I want them to get married tomorrow, on Thursday night." I called him up. I said, "You're crazy. The world is not shutting down. That's never happened in my, all my 45 years on this earth." At that time, it was 42 years on this earth. It hasn't happened. And that's, that's all of human history. So it can't be. It's not going to. And obviously he was right. And he fought me on it. And they got married that Thursday night. Don't worry, we were all wearing gloves. Whatever. But So the Shaila was, in that situation, they canceled the Sunday night wedding. And now there was a new proposal to make a wedding on Thursday night. The girl had already gone to the mikvah. Maybe she needs to wait another 7 days. So in that case, it doesn't have to, because they never really canceled it. They just moved it up. But there were many weddings that were canceled. And then they got married 3 weeks later. Or 2 weeks later, or a week later, or they didn't know. I have a very close friend, Rabbi Eli Storch in DRS. He, the night before his son's wedding, he wasn't sure if his son was getting married the next day. Like it was, he said it was such a musr because we spend months and months and months preparing weddings, and we think like you need all that time to prepare weddings. 12 hours, a wedding on the lawn in Darche Torah, right? And they're married. It worked. But then you have all of these difficult shailas. So why am I mentioning this? There's a shaila, what about a woman who's had a hysterectomy? Does she require dam chimud? means you have to worry about Dam Chima. Now, one thing I could tell you, if she were to gush blood, you would go to the hospital, but you would not say she's a Nida, right? Because if she's had a hysterectomy, then there is no uterine bleeding because there is no uterus. So what would you say about that? So Rav Vosner quotes a Tshuva Sefer that says, well, we know the Gemara tells us about a pasuk in this week's Parsha that Sarah was an Akara, Vati Sarah Akara, Ein La Vlad. And the Gemara says, Ein La Beis HaVlad. She didn't even have a rechem. She didn't even have a uterus. And yet we also know that she had a baby. She became a Nida. Pierced a Nida on the day that the Malachim came and visited her. And it sounds like she may have even been a Nida earlier than that. Ooh, so must be that there's... And they start... Where you go with that, that's a... You have to do some intellectual gymnastics to figure out, is that a Raya yes? Is that a Raya no? So they go back and forth on that. But one simple argument, says Rav Vosner, is that's irrelevant. It's an Agadata Gemara. You can't learn a halacha from an Agadata Gemara. There are many, many Agadata Gemaras. The Binyan Sion tries to defend another Agadata Gemara. He says, there is a Gemara Masechta Sota in the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Right? So they show Tamar that they show Yehuda, Tamar is accused of sleeping with some guy. And she didn't want to embarrass Yehuda, but she had taken some stuff from him as a mashkon or as a payment. And she said, the man who owns these items is the person who I was with. And they show those items to Yehuda, and Yehuda had the option of saying, oh, that must have been an evil man, kill her, right? Or he could say, no, that was me, and he could admit to wrongdoing. But she gave him that option. She didn't just say it was Yehuda. She gave him that option by letting him admit on his own if he wanted to. Says the Gemara, you see from there that it's noach lo, that it's better for a person to be yapel atzmo l'kif shana esh rather than to be malvin p'nei chaver barabim. Better, Tamar was about to be thrown into a fire and be burnt and burnt alive. And better to do that than to embarrass somebody publicly. Now, there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that tells us that there are three averos for which one should rather die than violate the avera. Tosos asks on the spot. The Gemara just told us another one. Embarrassing someone publicly. Right? If someone were to hold a gun to your head and say, call that person a funny nickname, you should. That will embarrass him. Right? Remember when I was a kid, when I was a little kid, I was a little chubby as a kid. And I got the nickname from my parents, who I love, should be well, Butch. So I remember when I was a super cool high school kid, you can imagine how cool I was, in a major social setting, my cousin, who was 2 years older than me, saw that I was feeling very cool about myself, and he screamed across the room, hey Butch, right? If someone was holding a gun to his head and said, call him Butch or I'm going to shoot you, right, he probably should have said, shoot me, I can't do that. I can't embarrass somebody publicly. Now I'm embarrassing him. Okay. So Tosfos asks, how did this not make the list? The Gemara Sanhedrin said there are only three things. Here's a fourth thing. So you'd expect the answer to be, Ein Lemeid Din Midivrei Agada. Don't learn from Divrei Agada. And many Achronim say that way. So the Binyan Sion says, no, I think this is actually a Dvar Halacha. I think we actually do Paskin this way. And that's why Tosfos gives a different answer. Tosfos says, it doesn't make it to the list, because the list in Masechta Sanhedrin are only those things that are explicit in the Torah. It's not explicit in the Torah not to embarrass someone. It's only part of the Avta L'Re'echa Kamocha. So that's why it doesn't make the list. Rabbeinu Yonah gives another answer, but they take it seriously. It's not Agadata Gemara, and they take it not just seriously, they take it L'Halacha. So it seems that this rule is not an ironclad rule. I see I'm already out of time. We're close to it. So maybe just to wrap it up, why is it that we wouldn't be able to learn from Agada? So one possibility is, it's just not what Agada is for. Agada to Gemaras are meant to teach us morality, teach us philosophy, to teach us how a Jew thinks, teach us how a Jew feels, but not necessarily how a Jew acts. That's what Halacha is for. And the Agada sometimes will compromise on the accuracy, on the action side of things, in order to convey a more powerful message on the Jewish thought and Jewish feeling side of things. L'mashal, when you give a mashal for something, for anything, the mashal is not always perfectly halachically accurate. The mashal is not always perfectly realistically accurate. Right? You're just trying to give a mashal that helps the person understand something. Agada is one giant mashal that's helping us understand something that's very deep and very important to what it means to be a Jew. But because of that, it will sometimes sacrifice the halacha. Alternatively, when it comes to Agadata, certainly certain types of Agadata, we can't even begin to comprehend what it really means. Meaning a lot of times you'll have a story in the Gemara, a father and a daughter, and the father's not a father, the daughter's not a daughter, the princess isn't a princess, the king is not a king. Meaning everything is representative of something else. And it's hard for us to tell when the Gemara is speaking literally and when it's speaking allegorically. Halacha demands clarity. Halacha demands that it's scientific, that you're able to see how to trace the logic of a sugya. And Agata just doesn't lend itself to that type of reasoning. And therefore it seems that there is significant discussion in the Achronim as to what exactly how broad this rule is that we don't paskin from Agada. And in each case where someone says we don't, you'll find someone else that will say that we do. Sometimes they'll say we only don't paskin like Agada when it's against the halacha. Sometimes poskim will say even if it's not against the halacha, you have this constant give and take. There's even a machlokas whether we paskin within Agada. You know, let's say there's a machlokas in Hashkafa, what one should believe. So, do you paskin on that? So, it's a very, very open kind of area. I don't have a clear beat on exactly, you know, when to paskin like an Agada, when not to, but it's something as we continue our march through Shas, going on now from Ksubas, there are going to be many beautiful Agadatas in Nedarim also. Maybe keep our eyes open for it. When we see in Agadat Gemara, and we see some posik brings it as a proof to something, some rishon tries to derive halacha from it, keep our eyes open to it. You know, my chavrusa Rabbi Razman used to always keep lists as we were going through Shas, like lists of occurrences that happened throughout Shas. It's a good list to keep of Agadatas that we see that make an impact on halacha. I bet we can come out with something very nice if we are just a little bit more attuned to not just understanding the Agadata, but understanding perhaps its implications. I wish you all a mazel tov and about to be Mesayim Maseches Ksubos. And Baruch Hashem, we shall learn many Gemaras, Halacha and Agada together in good health.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Leibowitz.